What if I told you that the greatest threat to human civilization isn't nuclear war, climate change, or artificial intelligence, but something invisible to the naked eye? Throughout history, infectious diseases have toppled empires, reshaped demographics, and killed more people than all wars combined. Yet we remain dangerously unprepared for the next pandemic, despite clear warnings that it's not a matter of if, but when. This reality check comes from decades of frontline experience in epidemiology, where connecting dots between isolated cases can mean the difference between containing an outbreak and watching it engulf the world. The nickname Bad News Mike wasn't earned by being pessimistic. It came from delivering uncomfortable truths that officials didn't want to hear. But here's the thing. Infectious diseases represent the only health threat capable of simultaneously disrupting society's functioning, halting global travel and trade, and destabilizing governments worldwide. Unlike chronic conditions that develop slowly or injuries that affect individuals, pandemics can transform our world overnight. Despite a stark 2005 warning in Foreign Affairs that time was running out to prepare, little meaningful action followed. This isn't about spreading fear. It's about understanding what we're up against and why our current approach falls dangerously short. The AIDS crisis emerged suddenly in the early 1980s, demonstrating how quickly an unknown pathogen could devastate populations. When Secretary Heckler promised an AIDS vaccine within 2 years in 1984, she fundamentally misunderstood HIV's nature as a retrovirus that embeds permanently in cells, making her timeline tragically optimistic. The human cost was staggering. One woman contracted HIV from a contaminated blood transfusion during routine hip surgery in 1983, dying 2 years later, one of thousands who suffered before blood screening existed. By 2014, nearly 37 million people worldwide lived with HIV, with 2 million new infections annually. Here's the sobering lesson. Despite understanding exactly how HIV spreads, we couldn't stop behaviors that transmitted it. Evidence and knowledge weren't enough. Cultural factors, stigma, healthcare barriers, and social inequalities all fueled the virus's spread. High-risk behaviors persisted even among well-informed populations, revealing that successful public health interventions must address not only medical aspects, but also the social, cultural, and behavioral factors influencing disease transmission. Growing up in small-town Iowa with an abusive, alcoholic father taught valuable lessons about standing your ground, skills that later proved essential in public health battles. That early resilience merged with a love for medical detective stories, setting a career path in motion. Epidemiology studies disease patterns in populations to prevent illness. The legendary Bill Foge, who helped eradicate smallpox, stated that the purpose of public health is to promote social justice. The goal isn't preventing death, which remains inevitable, but replacing bad deaths with good ones by preventing early, needless suffering. The 1980 Toxic Shock Syndrome investigation exemplified this approach. When cases suddenly appeared, primarily affecting menstruating women, research revealed that high-absorbency tampons released oxygen into the normally anaerobic vagina, transforming ordinary bacteria into toxin factories. Reducing absorbency dropped cases from thousands to dozens annually. This investigation demonstrated that data requires context, multiple scientific perspectives are vital, and asking the right questions prevents wrong answers. Microbes existed before us, co-evolved with us, and will outlast us. Single-cell life appeared within a billion years of Earth's formation, dominating Earth for over 3 billion years, creating our oxygen atmosphere and making complex life possible. The numbers reveal our disadvantage. Microbes reproduce every 20 minutes versus humans every 25 years, a 40 million to 1 generational advantage in evolutionary adaptation. We worsen this by venturing into rainforests, concentrating in megacities, practicing intensive livestock farming, and misusing antimicrobials, all forcing rapid microbial adaptation. For most of human history, scattered populations limited outbreaks. The agricultural revolution 10,000 years ago changed everything, concentrating humans and animals perfect conditions for zoonotic diseases. Today's world favors microbes even more. Population exploded from 800 million in 1900 to 7.6 billion today, while food animal populations grew faster still. Global travel spreads diseases worldwide before detection, and climate change expands tropical diseases into new regions. The battle lines? Microbial genetic simplicity and speed versus human intellect and organization. Vaccines have profoundly shaped human history. George Washington mandated smallpox inoculation for his army, while Thomas Jefferson called it medicine's greatest improvement. The impact has been staggering. Pertussis down 84%, measles down 99%, and polio, diphtheria, and smallpox eliminated entirely. When Jonas Salk's polio vaccine freed parents from fear of iron lungs in 1954, he famously said there was no patent. Could you patent the sun? Yet the vaccine business model has fundamentally changed. In 2014, global pharmaceutical revenue exceeded $1 trillion. The top five vaccine manufacturers combined for only $23.4 billion, just 2 to 3% of the drug market. The model fails during emerging outbreaks like Ebola or Zika. Phase 3 clinical trials represent the valley of death, when substantial costs accumulate with no revenue. The Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness Innovations aims to fill market gaps, but even this initiative thinks too small for the magnitude of threats we face. While pandemics dominate headlines, three infectious killers quietly devastate global populations. In 2014-2015, 36.9 million people lived with HIV, 9.6 million had tuberculosis, and malaria infected 214 million. These diseases disproportionately strike the world's poorest regions, perpetuating cycles of poverty. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has championed efforts guided by the principle that all lives have equal value. Their malaria initiatives achieved a 25% case reduction and 42% fewer deaths between 2004 and 2016 through improved diagnosis, indoor spraying, and insecticide-treated bed nets. HIV/AIDS has become manageable in wealthy nations, but 2 million new infections occur yearly, 70% in sub-Saharan Africa. Young women face double the infection risk of male peers. Half of those infected remain undiagnosed, and most lack access to prevention or treatment. PEPFAR has invested over $85 billion since 2003, saving 20 million lives, yet funding has stagnated. Tuberculosis remains formidable. The WHO estimates one-third of the world carries latent TB with a 10% lifetime activation risk. Drug-resistant strains and TB-HIV combinations create devastating synergy. Despite killing 4,100 people daily, TB receives far less attention than diseases like Ebola. The next pandemic could arrive tomorrow, or in 10 years, but it will arrive. Our most critical action is developing a game-changing influenza vaccine and vaccinating the world's population. This is scientifically attainable, with approximately $1 billion annually for 7 to 10 years. The Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness Innovations represents progress, but its $200 million annual funding falls short. We need $1 billion annually to develop, license, purchase, and distribute critically needed vaccines. Resources are useless without leadership and effective command structure. The WHO needs major overhaul or replacement. A NATO-type treaty organization where member nations pre-commit resources would keep politics out of emergency response. We have the knowledge, technology, and resources to protect ourselves. What we lack is collective will and coordinated action. The next pandemic won't wait. It will exploit every gap in our defenses. The question isn't whether we can prepare adequately, it's whether we will.